It is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, and her name is Erica R. from Fresno, and she says, "Nothing happens in God's world by mistake."
My name is Erica, and I am an alcoholic. I had a terrible time getting here, so I super apologize for being a few minutes late. Hope I didn't stress anybody out too bad. Nothing happens by mistake. I really have learned that. So the basics, my sobriety date is October 25th of 2006. That makes recently 9 years. I have a sponsor. Yeah, it's pretty rad, huh? I have a sponsor. Her name is Astrid. She's in Fresno. My home group is the Treasures. We meet on Tuesdays at the North Mennonite Church. It's a super awesome meeting. Come check us out if you're in the area. So that's about that. It's actually Erica W. now, recently. Fancy, right? I've heard people talk about becoming alcoholic, and I don't think that I ever became an alcoholic. I really think that I was born one. All of my earliest memories, I've always thought alcoholically, I've always behaved alcoholically. I was very self-centered, very selfish, self-aware, self-conscious, just very much in my head. I had one of those childhoods that nobody was surprised that I ended up where I ended up. Things were rough. I was abused. I was bullied. It just hurt. Most of my entire childhood hurt. And I didn't quite really understand why, you know, like why does everything suck so bad all the time? When I was 13, I met this girl. Her name was Laura, Laura with an O, and she was beautiful and crazy, and she had no concept of the word no, and she was everything I had ever wanted to be. She was just magic, and so she taught me how to not have any concept of the word no. She taught me how to steal bottles of alcohol. She taught me how to dance in the rain. She tried to teach me how to steal cars, but I did say no on that one. Like, that one was too far for me. I am really actually a chicken. She and I, we became absolutely inseparable. She introduced me to marijuana, which was not my BFF. And shortly thereafter, we went and we played Hey Mister, and we got 2 40s of Old English. And it was magic. Magic happened that day. I wasn't scared. I wasn't hurt. I was just as badass as she was. Like, I was just as tough as she was. I was just as hardcore. I wasn't a faker that day. You know, when I was about 12 or 13, I discovered that the way to make the world back off of me was to be scarier than the world. So I shaved off my eyebrows, and I listened to Marilyn Manson, and I doodled all over my face, and the world left me alone. And they backed off of me, but I mean, I'm really a scared little girl. But I made them think I was really, really frightening. I would really get into a fight with you. I've never been in a fight. Like, never. I don't do that. But I totally made them think that, you know. And so when I got through half of that 40, I wasn't a faker. I really was all those things, and it was magic, and I absolutely adored it. My drinking didn't immediately become, off the charts. I was 13. It was a little difficult to get to. But just about every weekend. By the time I was 14, I had a boyfriend who was 24, so that made things a lot easier. He'd bring home a couple of 32s just about every day. He had beer every day, but about every day he brought some home for me, too. When I was 15, I was a week away from 15. He was arrested for statutory rape, and
rightly so.
But at the time, I didn't think that. At the time, I thought he's going to jail for loving me. He's the only one who's ever loved me. No, he's sick. Sick. Really sick dude. Didn't know it, though. But so I had this horrible, horrible problem. Like, the only person that I thought had ever loved me was going to jail for loving me. I felt horrible, hideous guilt about it. And I didn't know what to do. And so, you know, I went through, like, my Rolodex of, like, what do? I chopped myself up. That didn't work. And so I said, oh, adults, when they have a problem, they get a drink. So I got a drink. And it was the first time that I think I ever drank for a problem. Before that, like, it was just because I was having a blast, you know? Awesome. And so this was the first time that I drank for a problem. And I think that it changed changed my intentions with the drinking, really. By the time I was 15, I was a daily drinker, a nightly bedwetter. I swore I wasn't a thief. I really did. But I stole $4 from my grandma's purse every night. I swore I wasn't gonna, because tonight I'm gonna take a night off, and I can't keep doing this to my grandma. I moved in with my grandma after a while. And I can't keep doing this. And so I would, though, every night. I was down there at 7-Eleven. Hey, I don't have an ID, but I swear I'm 21. I was not. I was not at all 21. But that was my line. So I would play Hey Mister every night, and I would drink 240s every night. My grandma was one of those grandmas that, like, if you weren't eating, she wasn't doing her job. And so, like, it was like, here, I'm eating lasagna. Like, well, I'm also going to bake some chicken. Would you like a cake? And we have turkey. Like, you know, she was like forever with the food. And so I was taking in probably 2,000 calories of beer every night too, and I gained 70 pounds in less than 2 months. Ballooned. I had stretch marks on my knees. It was nuts. It was crazy. And I just hid. I hid in my grandma's spare room, because I was already out getting myself in trouble when I would go out with my friends, you know. I kept accidentally sleeping with people's boyfriends, and I kept accidentally peeing on things, and I was really loud. Like, I'm loud now. I'm 9 years sober. Like, I was super, super loud drunk, and I was pretty obnoxious, and, you know, I just wasn't a whole lot of fun to be around already at 16. So I really didn't. I just hung out. Wednesdays were my favorite because we had Dog the Bounty Hunter and then Chris Angel that I could watch. And if I passed out before, what was it? The Iron Chef. If I passed out before Iron Chef came on, like, it was a good night. After a while, that got pretty lonely. I started drunk dialing the radio DJ. I didn't listen to the radio, but I would call him, and I don't know what he was doing talking to me, but he would, like, put me on hold when he had to go on air, and then, like, come back, and I would talk to him for hours. No idea. Whatever. Lots of people co-signed weird things in my story. I was always looking for the him. I always thought him was going to fix me. It was always, always, you know, I just need to find someone to love me. If someone would just love me, then I could be okay. I've been trying to get married since I was 13. My first boyfriend, I had him cheating on his girlfriend for a year. When that didn't work out, found the old dude. And then random one-night stand that I dragged out into a year. So that's when I was almost 18. I had been seeing this dude. I didn't like him. He had a crush on me for years and years. I didn't like him. Didn't like him at all. Dated him for a year. Because he liked me, and that was good enough. And then I met this dude on public transportation, and he was 6'5", and he had shaved eyebrows, and he had tall boots, and a Marilyn Manson t-shirt, and it was it. Like, that was it. He was the one. I called my my boyfriend, who had been trying to dump me for about 2 months, and I told him, like, we are so done, and he said, I do not accept that. And I laughed and laughed and laughed, and it never occurred to me that's exactly what I had been doing to him for, like, 2 months. Like, I don't accept that. Like, and I thought he was crazy for thinking that that was, like, a thing. Like, no, I just said we're done, so that's all. And so this guy, I met him on the bus, and I went and I stole a bottle of Jack Daniels, and he thought that was really cute. So, I mean, I don't know what else you need to make a marriage work. So I married him. We were both very, very abusive people at that point in our lives. I got married for my 20th birthday. That was my 20th birthday present. It was my marriage license. And very, very, very quickly, it became not just emotionally and verbally abusive. It also became a physically abusive relationship. He beat me up nearly every night. And that's not just entirely his fault. I mean, he's the one who did it, but I really knew which buttons to push. I really knew what to say to really just dig it out of him. And, you know, honestly, looking back, I think that I was hoping that he would kill me. And actually, the only moment of joy that I ever remember in my entire life before I got sober, not getting married, not my sister being born, not anything normal. He was choking me. He was strangling me. And I was fighting because that's what you do, like when you're being strangled, like you fight and stuff. And then I remember seeing the black come in around the edge of my vision, and it hit me. He's going to kill me. He's finally going to kill me. And it was the most joyful moment I'd ever experienced in my life, and I wanted it to last forever, and I wanted it to hurry up, and I just stopped fighting, and I just laid, and I just wanted to soak up every part of this experience. He's finally going to kill me. He's going to kill me. And then I woke up. And I was really confused. I didn't remember the incident that was happening just before I passed out. It just felt like waking up from a blackout, which I did every day. And so but he wasn't in the bed with me, and that was super not allowed because he was always being bad if he wasn't in bed. So I went out to go find him, and he was on the payphone out in front of our place, and he was screaming into the phone, "I just killed my wife. I just killed my wife." And I said, "I'm right here, you idiot. What are you talking about?" And so, I pieced it all together later that morning. The police came. They took him to the psych ward. He spent 3 days there. I noticed that I couldn't really use my arm those 3 days that he was gone. And so when he came home, he made me go to the hospital, and he had broken my arm before he had strangled me. And so they asked me in the hospital, like, you didn't trip. And I said, absolutely, I did. I tripped on the curb. And they said, no, you didn't. And I said, well, I'm not telling you anything else. And they said, all right, put a cast on it, and sent me home. So that was like, that's basically like all of our relationship. It was very, very codependent, very abusive. I thought if I could fix him, if I could love him hard enough, then he would be better, and then he could make me better. He could love me back. Like, I could change him, you know, and we could have this magical fairy tale life together. What I had no clue, what I had no idea about was that, you know, we were both completely in the throes of alcoholism, and that there is no human aid. I had no clue. So finally, he ended up, he broke my nose and went to prison. It was his third domestic violence, and it was a broken bone, so it was a felony. So he went to prison, and I was supposed to be sober while he was in jail, because he's sober, so I wasn't supposed to be partying. And I meant to. I thought that was fair, but I also didn't realize that I couldn't stop. I thought that I could if I wanted to, but I mean, really, who wants to? Like, this is what I do with my life, and it's the only thing that I enjoy about my life. I mean, and on honestly, it wasn't even that enjoyable at that time. Like, I was homeless, and I'd have to go panhandle to go get my first 32 of the day. Do you know how hard that is? That first 32? Oh, my God. It was murder. Then I found a store that would give me my first one on front, and I could drink my first one, and then I could panhandle up for the second one and pay for the first one, and that guy ruled. I loved that guy. I hung out on the east side a lot after I found him. So I was supposed to be getting sober, and I just wasn't, because who wants to? And he'll be gone for like a year. He'll never know. I'm writing letters that you can't even read, but he'll never know. I'm lying to him every week when he calls. Nope. Not a drop. And I was drinking every day of my life. I lived my life basically in like 5-hour increments. I would wake up and drink, and it'd be about 5 hours, and then I'd pass out again, and then, you know, continue that. So I lived my life in about 5-hour increments. He was getting ready. Why did I go to Job Corps? My grandma, I was living with my grandma again, and she said, look, you gotta go. Like, this is enough of this BS. And so I found this program called Job Corps, and you could go there, you live there, you work there, they pay you, they train you, like, perfect. So I went down to this program, and the only thing was you are absolutely, under no circumstances, even if you're 21, you are absolutely not allowed to drink. You're not allowed to drink and then come back on this campus. You're not allowed to have alcohol on this campus. Cannot do it. None whatsoever. And I said, perfect, because I don't drink anymore now that I'm going. Like, you know, I won't be around the same people. I'm going to have a totally different life. Everything's going to be totally different, and I'm going to quit drinking because I'm done drinking. And so when I went down there, I went down on a Monday, and they did, like, the intake interview and whatever, and I decided to be honest about my drinking, you know, because it's in my past, the night before. So, but it's in my past now, and I don't drink anymore. So I was totally honest about my drinking, and they wanted to send me to rehab, and I thought they were crazy. And I managed to talk them out of it. So I don't know how you're going to punish me if I haven't even gotten in trouble yet. Like, I really saw rehab as like a punishment. And so they said, okay, you know, that's behind you. All right. Well, we'll see. And so that was Monday I got there. Wednesday, my roommate had a bottle of Southern Comfort. And so I made it 2 days. I went to school that Thursday morning, and I did a really good job scrubbing my teeth that morning, but the kid next to me said he could smell it. And I said, no, you can't. And he said, yeah, no, I can. And I said, no, you can't, because I brushed my teeth. And he said, okay, great, but I can. And I was like, shit. Like, dang it, busted. So I decided I had to be more careful. And it took about 30 days. 30 days I got caught by the center. And they sent me home for a week. I was grounded for a month. I had to stay on the center. And so I decided, like, look, I'm going to be good. Like, for reals, you know, it was just a little slipsies. I'm going to be okay. And I was supposed to get off. I had a 30-day restriction, and on the 28th day, they caught me. And for 2 alcohol violations, you're supposed to be just completely kicked out, terminated, violated, done. Like, you're done with this program. And for some reason, absolutely nothing happened. They just extended my restriction. And so I decided, okay, look, I really have to buckle down. Like, for real, like, look, I'm really gonna get myself in some serious trouble. So I'm sober. And I'd never actually really, really wanted to before. I'd always thought I could quit if I wanted to. And I never wanted to before. And this time I really wanted to. And this time I really, really applied myself to it. And I did absolutely everything I could think of to not drink. The 4 years prior to that, I was doing everything I could to figure out how to drink right. And this time I was finally trying to figure out how to not drink. And I made it 2.5 months. And then a friend of mine had never taken dextromethorphan hydrobromide, which is basically Robitussin, and And I just didn't think that that was okay, that she had never experienced this hallucinogen. And I couldn't send her on her trip alone. So we went on down to Rite Aid. And, you know, once that happened, then cool. I've already messed up. I'm already not sober. And so I started drinking. But it'll only be for this week while we're on break. Only this week. We went and we hung out at some park. And apparently I peed all over myself and others. And I don't remember that part. But I do remember that we all had to walk back wrapped up in the sheets that we had brought to, like, sit on. And so we all walked back at least a mile to the center, like, wrapped up in sheets. And we jokingly called it our toga party. And it was just a mess. Like, every time I've ever tried to drink normally, just have a couple, that's always how it ends up. I end up peeing all over everything and walking home in a sheet. Like, every time. So we get back and I get caught again, because I'm not very sneaky. And that's it. They say, get out. Like, bye. See ya. I'm on the streets of San Bernardino. I have no way home. I have no money. And once again, I can't do anything because I can't stop drinking. Found a wonderful woman who worked there, and she bought me a Greyhound ticket home to my grandma's, and I went and I sat on her bed in her spare room one more time, and she came in and she said, Erica, look, like, you can't keep doing this. You gotta find somewhere to go. And it really sunk in. Like, I can't do anything. I can't do anything. Even this stupid school that seriously all you have to do is be there and not drunk. Like, that's it. Like, those are the requirements. And I can't even do that because I can't stop drinking. Like, holy shit, I can't stop drinking. And it just sunk in. And, you know, in my experience, like, people like me, we don't get better. People like me, we die this way. And so I didn't know, you know, TMZ and movies tell me that the only way you can get sober is to go to rehab. And so so I called around to all the rehabs in town, and the cheapest one was $800. And like I told you, I'm a panhandler. Like, I can't come up with $800. Like, I maybe eight, but $800, like, you're nuts. You're totally nuts. And so true hopelessness really, really settled in on me then. Absolutely no hope. I am going to die this way, and I cannot stand it one more day. I cannot live like this. Not one more day. I cannot do this. And I was pretty sure that God hated me so much I was going to live to be like 182 and miserable the entire time. Like, he wasn't even going to let me out and like getting dead, you know? Like, cool. Like, multiple times I should have been dead. The ambulance brought me back one time. That dude strangled me. Like, multiple times I should have been dead, and here I was. And it must be because God absolutely hates me that much. So this, like, absolute hopelessness settles in, and since there is no hope of me ever getting better, I gotta get serious about the suicide business. And so I decided on how. I was pretty sure I was going between two dates on when, and I had not yet made it to where. And my school called and said, if you're willing to go to rehab, we're willing to send you. And I said, okay. All right. And so they said, come back to school. And they sent me a Greyhound to come back to San Bernardino. And I went, and they had just started this program where they were sending people to rehab sometimes, and so I actually knew a dude who had just completed their treatment program, and so I knew that they were going to make me call every day for 2 weeks, and they were going to tell me they didn't have a bed, they had a bed, but they were going to make sure I was going to call every day for 2 weeks, and so I knew I was on to them for that one, and that first week I called every day, and I was like super ready to get in, super, like, I am ready to do this. And then that second week, it occurred to me that if I go get sober, then that means that I will be sober. And I only got a week left. And so, because I was at this school where alcohol was not readily available, I crammed every substance I could find into myself. Just everything I could possibly take, because I only had a week left. And so finally they called me, and they said, we're ready for you, come on in. And I took with me about 150 pills of alcohol in pill form is what I took, really. And, you know, just in case, I needed them. And so I got into that rehab, and mostly because I was scared of getting caught with them, but also because I decided that if I was gonna kill myself, because this thing wasn't gonna work, but if I was gonna kill myself with a clear conscience, then I had to have tried everything. That meant I really had to try. I really had to apply myself in this program. And so it was the second day I was there, and I was flushing most of my pills, and I was gonna keep five for just in case. And this voice happened inside my head that was not mine, because like I have my voice in there, and I know what that sounds like. It wasn't that one. And I said, "How are you gonna get this thing if you're saving this for later?" And I said, "All right." And I flushed them, and I said, "Y'all got 60 days to fix me. That's it. Y'all got 60 days to fix me, and then I'm out of here." And I threw myself into that program. I did what they said. I didn't know how in the world I was ever going to believe in this stupid God thing. I don't know how you learn how to believe in Santa Claus at 21 years old. Like, that's crazy. And if he does exist, he's a jerk, and he hates me. So I don't know how I'm going to do this God thing. But whatever. So I read Came to Believe. I read Came to Believe like cover to cover, searching in there for something that would make sense to me. And I read one line, and it said, "Pray with sincerity, if not yet belief." That I could do. And so that's what I did. And I did have a spiritual experience. I did have one of those fourth dimension, like mind-blowing awakenings. It took about 3 weeks every night praying in that bed. We had lights out, and that was super annoying. And just lay there with all that anxiety and that in your gut, and just barfing and sweating, and who can sleep? And all I could do was lay there and pray. And so that's what I did. And it took about 3 weeks, but I was rocketed into outer space. It was an experience that I can't put into words, but I came out of it knowing that there is something bigger than me, and it doesn't hate me, and in fact it loves me sincerely. And I didn't know what it was, and I didn't, and I was pretty sure it wasn't anyone else's idea of God ever. At least any idea of God that I had ever heard. And y'all said that was okay. God as I understand him. Perfect. And so I ran with that, and you know, I got out of that treatment center, and I went to one meeting, but it was a bunch of tweakers talking about meth. And I mean, I can relate a little, but like, that wasn't my jam. So so I didn't go back to AA. I had a spiritual advisor though, and I did enlarge my spiritual life. But what happened was, I went back to that husband. He'd just gotten out of prison, and you know, now I was sober, and he was relapsing 5 to 7 times a week. So I said, "You, sir, you need a meeting. You need some Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm fixed, obviously. It's been almost a year. I'm cured, but I am alcoholic, so it won't hurt me. I'll go with you." And so I started dragging him to these meetings, and what happened was that I came out of there like, "Oh my God, you guys, let's get sponsors. Like, did you hear what they said in there? Like, oh my God." Like, I came out on fire for AA, and he just wasn't having it. So one day he said he didn't feel well. And I knew that was a fib, but I also knew enough to know that I go to my meeting anyway. And so I went to the meeting, and I have no clue what anybody said. I didn't hear a single word, but I sat there for the entire hour. And once it was over, I went back to his house, and I knew I was going to bust him, or I was going to be a good wife and make him soup, but I was pretty sure that wasn't the case. And so I was going to go bust him, and I did. And he was there. He had makeup on because he's a goth kid. And he had his boots laced up. He had 2 beers. He had a beer in each hand. He was waiting on some girl to pick him up. And I said, wow, it's this again. I'm like, oh, yeah. And so, you know, I had left him 1,000 times, at least, minimum, 1,000 times. But it was never because I was done. It was never because I wanted to. It was never because I wanted different for myself. It was always to teach him a lesson. It was to scare him. And it was to make him straighten up. And it never worked. And so I was gathering my things. And he said, you don't have to go. You don't have to go. And I said, no, but this time I want to. And it was like this light switch had happened. And what the thought that had occurred to me was, am I willing to die for him? And for the very first time in my entire life, the answer was no. I knew that I could not stay with him. I could not stay in this relationship, and I could not continue to do this and stay sober. I could not. And for once in my life, staying sober and just being alive, like, mattered more than what I thought was my soulmate, you know? And it was magic once that occurred to me. Like, no, I really want to be sober. I really want to live. And so I left. I left that day, and I threw myself into this program. It was the first time I was ever single in my entire life, and I was single for about 8 months, which for me was a very, very long time. And I got a sponsor, and I worked the steps, and I did a fourth, and I did a fifth, and all these things that scared me, but I was so excited for them. I was so, so excited for them. I just, this whole entire world was just opening up around me that I never thought was for me. It's not that I didn't think it existed. I saw that other people lived in that world. I saw that other people were okay with their lives. I saw that other people had hard things and they walked through them and they were okay. I didn't think that was ever for me though. And I started doing that. I started walking. And it was wild. It was so absolutely wild. I moved to Fresno when I was about 1.5 years sober. I met my sponsor there, and she absolutely changed my entire life. She changed my sobriety and my recovery and my life. I found the young people's group there. I hated young people. I don't want no young people. I don't like young people. They freak me out. They're weird, and I don't like them. And I found this group of young people who were amazing. They were people my age who were working towards living the same kind of life that I was. We spoke the same language. They weren't going out to bars to go dancing. They were working steps on Friday night, you know? Like, it was awesome. Changed my life. My relationships, once I did start dating again, my relationships got progressively shorter, and I was really confused for a while, because it was like, I'm like getting weller, aren't I supposed to like be more successful at this? And I realized that I was, because I wasn't dragging out 2 month relationships into 5 years anymore. That's an accomplishment. So I became employable. I rebuilt my relationships with my family. My grandma, every time I would go see her, she would cry every single time, and she would tell me how proud of me she was. She was one of the only people in the world who didn't ever give up on me. And I hate that I put her in the position that she had to finally tell me, Erica, you gotta go. And I hate that I put her in the position that she had to just release me into the world and just hope that I didn't die. But what I am so, so, so grateful for is that this program allowed me to not have to die out there. This program gave my grandma back her granddaughter. I got 8 amazing, wonderful years with that woman, and I got to try to make up for all the bullshit that I put her through. And there in the end, she loved me. She was proud of me. She was happy for me. I gave her my first 1 year chip, and then every year after that, I didn't talk about my date or anything like that with her after that, but every year after that, she asked me for a chip. Like, where's my chip? And so I'd bring them to her. She put my GED up on the wall. Like, she was so proud. She was super fun. But anyway, so when I was about 3 years, I was 3 years sober, I dated a guy. He was in the program. He had 2 years, 2.5, and we dated for 6 months. I broke up with him. We weren't well. We weren't good together. I broke up with him. 2 weeks later, he hung himself. He had called me the Friday before, and we'd been doing this shenanigans for a while, and I finally just told him, like, look, dude, I'm not your girlfriend, I'm not your friend, I'm not your sponsor, like, you gotta find someone else to call, because this is killing me. And apparently his sponsor told him just about the same thing. He was unwilling to do what the program required of him, and he came down. He had three options. He could either drink, get dead, or get better, and he chose get dead. He did die sober, but this disease took him, and that was absolutely the hardest thing I've ever walked through in my life. The guilt over that, just the loss of it, it was absolutely horrendous. I lost all trust and all faith in my higher power. The dude, once again, is a jerk, and he doesn't like me, and I don't like him, and he sucks at his job, and how am I supposed to trust him to do his job? And I lived like that for about 8 months. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I lost 40 pounds. I existed on Monsters and cigarettes. Every 2 or 3 days, I would force myself to eat a double cheeseburger. But I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything. Finally, my sponsor said, look, we gotta do some work on this, because this is dangerous. And so I did, and I managed to come out of it. And I came out of it with a faith and a trust in my higher power that I really think is pretty unshakable. Like, I really hope he doesn't test that. But after coming out of that, if I can learn to trust my higher power again, like, I don't know what else could shake it. This program has given me a relationship with a higher power that I don't really understand, but has walked me through absolutely everything. So after I got well, I found this other guy, and he was short, and he was buff, and he was young, and like I told you, like, my ex-husband was, like, really tall and really skinny and, like, doodled on his face and much older. I like him real old. I told you that. So I told my roommate for about a month how I did not have a crush on this short dude, and it took about a month, but I finally realized, like, you don't really have to tell people how you don't have a crush on someone if you don't have a crush on them. I got a crush on a short dude. And so I let him know that I had a crush on him, and that was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. Last May, we got married. He's the most amazing, incredible man I've ever known. He's also in this program. He's got 6 years. He forces me to work this program. He forces me to do a tenth. And I'll tell you, it's so much easier to do that. It's so much easier to keep on my side of the street and to clean it up when I know that the other person that I'm with is also going to do that same thing. I don't have to worry about his stuff. I mean, I can't worry about his stuff anyway, but it makes it easier knowing that he's going to worry about it. He's walked with me through amazing and tremendous things. My little sister, she's 19, and when she was about 7, I came home completely plowed drunk, and my eye was swollen up like golf, like softball size, and it was black, and it was completely sealed shut, and I just passed out in the bed, and I was supposed to be babysitting her. My aunt left, she had to go to work, and I woke up at 9:30 p.m. She left at noon. I woke up at 9:30 p.m. covered in about 200 stuffed animals, and my little sister was on the other bed crying. She thought I was dead for 9.5 hours. She thought she was alone in a house with a dead body who was her sister for 9.5 hours. Like, I can't imagine what that's like. Sucks, I'm sure. And so that was the kind of life, that was what I showed my sister. And today, I lived in New Orleans for 3 years. I just moved back, and my aunt sent her out twice to come stay with us for 2 weeks at a time. Like, I'm trustworthy enough to have a teenager for 2 weeks with no adult supervision. Like, that I'm the adult supervision? That's hilarious. And we had a blast. We had so much fun. And And tomorrow we're going to go get tattooed together. Like, how fun. Like, I can't even take it. Like, she's my best friend. And she's getting my handwriting with something that I've counseled her that I learned in this program, which is I used to just tell her, like, well, I'm just terribly sorry that you're human. And, I mean, that's it. Like, we're all just human. We all make mistakes and we all hurt. And I'm terribly sorry that you're human. And apparently that stuck because she wants me to write it down and she wants it tattooed on her arm. And I said, that is the sweetest thing anyone has ever said to me. This program has made me, I was just thinking about this actually. The steps didn't change who I am. They uncovered who I really am and then allowed me to be okay with that and then allowed me to show that to you. Allowed me to be that in the world. And I can't tell you the ease and comfort that I find in being able to just be who I am. And that's cool. If you like it, rad. If you don't, well, we don't have to be friends. And that's okay. Like, to just be okay with who I am and be able to just walk in the world and know that, like, I'm okay is just magic. That's all I ever asked for from this program was just to be okay, and I've gotten far, far, far more than that. Time's just about up, so I'll wrap it up. I just sincerely hope that each of you finds here what I've found here, if you haven't already. It didn't save my life. I didn't have one. It gave me a life, and it's a life that's worth living, and it's a life that I don't know how to be grateful enough for. Everything I've ever wanted is true. Everything I ever cried for and chopped myself up about, everything that I ever prayed for, everything that I ever wanted has come true in my life. It's made me employable. It's made me a person who's marryable. It's made me a person who's useful. And that's magic. I never thought that I would want to be useful to others. Who cares about being useful? It's actually the only thing I care about. I'm a hairstylist by trade, and my coworkers frequently joke that Erica just likes doing hair for free because I find it difficult to charge for service. Like, and that's my actual job, and that's what I'm supposed to be doing. But I find it very difficult to charge for service. I just love being of service. Like, here, have all the bleaches. Like, because it makes me feel good. It makes me feel useful. What used to be my therapist, I'll end with this. What used to be my therapist, when I was a teenager, I recently reconnected with him about a year ago, right before my grandma passed. It was just like no time had ever passed. I emailed him and I said, I don't know if you remember me. And he said, of course I do, bean burrito, extra cheese, no onion, sour cream. And I said, that's right. How do you remember that? That's what he always brought me. And it had been at least 17 years since I had seen or spoken to him. And he knew my Taco Bell order. And he invited me to come stay with him. When my grandma passed, I flew out here and I stayed with him. And I met his kids for the first time. I knew about two of them, but they had a third. And I didn't know about her. And I walked in and she said, sister, we already made your room. And I said, oh my God. Like, I'm like welcomed into these people's homes. Like, crazy. Nuts. I'm kicked out of houses, not like invited in, you know? And so this last May when I got married, I asked him to walk me down the aisle. And he thought I was joking at first until I told him like what he had to wear and like when the rehearsal dinner was. And he was like, oh, you really mean that? And I was like, yes, absolutely. You know my story. You know I ain't got no one else. There ain't no other dad around. Like, come on, like, get your suit on. And so he did, and he walked me down the aisle. And this last month, he asked me to come work in his practice. And I said, oh, no, I don't want to go to school. I ain't got 200 grand to become a therapist. And he said, I don't want you to go to school. School ruins therapists. And I said, well, what are you talking about? He said, you got your story, and I want you to come work for me. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, just show up tomorrow. And so what I've been doing, office work. I've been filing and whatnot, but I've also been running groups for teenage kids that are in very similar situations to the ones that I was. And you know why I am so appreciative of being asked to tell my story, and why I find why what makes me so happy that I have a story is there's a unique understanding that. There's a magic that happens when you believe that someone understands you. Not when someone understands you, but when you believe that someone understands you. There's a magic. And that was what happened with my sponsor. I believed that she understood me. That's what happens in these rooms. I believed that you understood me. And so I get to carry that over to these other kids, and they believe that I understand them. And it's magic. And if I can be useful to them, like, how rad. Like, I just can't even tell you how rad my life is. I'm just so appreciative to this program, and I'm so appreciative of all of you, and I'm really glad that you're here, so I'm not standing here talking to myself. So, thanks.